Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, welcome and encourage you to go back and listen. We've had some great guests for the last number of years. And this week, we're happy to have join us Rod Matthews. Rod is the CEO of Team Dynamics and also a member of the board of directors. And he has served in technology companies over the last 34 plus years, and he's had a number of leadership positions. He has some great wisdom to share around leadership, and I know you'll enjoy our conversation today with Rod. Oh, I always love hearing people's career journeys. Could you kind of give us a kind of a flyover of your career and kind of how you have gotten to where you are today?
Yeah, I actually have a really interesting start to my career, and then I started off my my working life as a professional musician. I was trained at Juilliard, played the tuba, and the orchestra I was in went bankrupt, and so I had to figure out what I was going to go do next. And so I jumped into technology, which was always my other love.
Sure.
And then I worked my way through a ton of functional areas. I started off my tech career working in basically support desks, help desks. I worked for Citigroup in their large national data center in New Jersey, and then worked for a company called Quarterdeck in the support team, did a lot of escalations. That moved into QA, which moved into engineering, you know, management and operations. Then went into product management, then started doing some marketing and competitive type work, moved into investor relations at NetApp. Then moved into general management, started doing a lot of M&A, and started doing CEO leadership work a few years ago. So did a little bit of everything along the way, a lot of sales along the way too.
Yeah. Well, I loved it. We'll talk a little bit more from going from musician to CEO. That's maybe a title of a book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you could sit down with a 22-year-old Rod and give him some advice, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give him?
Yeah, I think there's a few pieces that really are always top of mind, even now, later in my career, right? The first is think strategically about the companies that you choose to work for. You know, do the companies have scale, or they have the potential to scale? Are they growing fast? I missed some opportunities, like when the dot-com era was really going gangbusters, because I wasn't thinking that way. So between 1995 and 1999, I missed some opportunities that you know, I probably should have caught. So when I moved to Silicon Valley in 1999 and went to work for NetApp, that really kind of changed how I thought and changed the trajectory of my career. And I was 31 years old at that time. So I learned a lot in my 20s. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't trade that, but I wasn't really thinking strategically enough. The second thing is don't forget that excellence in really any area of your life, you know, it does count for a lot. So it could be sports, could be music, could be business pursuits, could be a lot of different things. But those are things that tell people that you're coachable, that you're good at, you know, chasing a whatever it is, and that you can do something at a high level. And that you're adaptable. So don't shy away from that, you know, early in your career, that maybe you played sports in college, maybe you play music, maybe you were in student government, you know, whatever it is, you know, really, really play that up, because that tells people a lot about who you are and separates you from the crowd. And then third is seek out mentors, right? There's a lot of people along the course of my career that gave me a lot of rope. And I've had conversations with a few of them where, you know, it's along the lines of, I can't believe you gave me these responsibilities at that point in my career. But, you know, people like Dan Warmenhoven and Jeff Allen at NetApp that put me in some outward facing investor roles that I really had no business doing at the time, but I learned a ton and they were there to help me. Frank Slootman, Mike Scarpelli, Data Domain, BJ Jenkins at EMC, and then BJ plus David Flagno, Michael Peroni at Barracuda. You know, these are all people that had big influences on me, you know, through my career that really gave me a lot more rope than I probably was ready for. And that's how I grew, right? It was people trusting me. So find those mentors that are going to be in your camp and give you some things that you need to think about how you're going to do it, where failure is an option, and you want to make sure you don't do that. You know, that little bit of fear that comes into it is what makes you grow.
So did you actively seek out mentors, or did it happen just kind of organically through your connection with them?
I actually actively sought them out. Just the way I'm wired, I'm a pretty extroverted social person. I look at people and I think that are good at what they do, and I want to go figure out why they're good at what they do. And that, you know, I think most people want to help other people. And if you show an aptitude that, hey, I want that help, I want to be coached, I want to do more, there's generally a great mentor there to help you. So being transparent about that and showing people that you're capable of doing that is really, really important.
So everybody has their first leadership experience. You've done a great job as an individual contributor. You get tapped on the shoulder to take on more responsibility in leading people. What do you wish you would have known before you took that first leadership position?
I think the very first thing you have to learn, and it takes a little while to really figure this out, is as the leader, you have to work with your team. You still need to do work, right? I think, leaders that get their hands dirty are the strongest leaders. But you also have to delegate, and that skill of empowering your team and figuring out what does your team need and what can you do to help your team and what can you do to enable your team is really the superpower. And it takes some people longer than others to figure that out, that you're not just a work harder than everybody else person. You're the leader of the team, and you're looking for roadblocks, and you're looking for things that people need to succeed. And sometimes the news that you have to give people and the coaching you have to give people can be a little challenging, right? So it's your job to enable, it's your job to coach, and it's your job to delegate. And sometimes when you move into a leadership role, it feels like you're not doing your job when you do those things because your job changed. And the sooner people can figure that out and kind of get into that new mindset, the more effective they are as a leader.
So has your leadership changed since taking the title of CEO? How has it changed over the years?
I'll tell you that the CEO role is unique in that you don't have any peers, right? You have the board that you report to, and you have the team that all reports up to you. But you're kind of there by yourself. And so one of the things that I've done a lot more as CEO is just peer networking with other CEOs, mm-hmm. and other people that are in similar roles that can give you advice. It's one of those jobs where you look at it and you think, yeah, I can do that. And then when you start doing the job, you realize it's totally different than what you thought it was going to be.
Sure.
And so I enjoy that part of it. The one thing that I feel more as CEO is I've always felt responsible for my teams and for their well-being and for performance. And when you're responsible for the entire organization, you really feel that, right? You're responsible for all your employees. You're responsible for protecting, the integrity of the company and the operational, capabilities of the company, and, driving the future of the company in the best way you can. And so it's a very different kind of way of thinking when you get into that role.
So what have you, since becoming CEO, you mentioned that you report to a board and you're working closely with them. What are some things that you've learned about building trust with the board?
Yeah. And I've worked with boards for a lot of years, and some of the really, really interesting discussions we had back at NetApp with the board were super fascinating because of some of the people that were on our board. Don Valentine from Sequoia Capital was on our board, and always had phenomenal insights into things. And so I got to occasionally go in and be a fly on the wall for some of those discussions. And it was sure. Incredible to watch that interaction. And so there's a couple of things, and I'll start there. There was a course they had at NetApp for people that were coming in to present to exec staff or present to the board. And it was a course, I just remember the name of it. It was called Presenting to the Big Dogs. And the whole idea of the course was basically to remember that you're in their meeting, they're not in your meeting. And one of the key concepts was to tell them what you're going to tell them up front, right? And just be very clear about, this is what I'm here to present. Here's the outcome I'm looking for. Just be very clear up front about what you want. But then remember that it's their meeting and you don't get to drive the conversation. So if you go in with a deck or a presentation or a set of points that you want to make in order, you may not get to do that. And so you have to be flexible and be able to make your point and land your objective in a kind of fluid environment. So that's the first thing, is just remember that you have to be able to kind of think on your feet. But the other thing is just understanding what's important to each board member. Different people come in, if they're independent board members, if they're investors, they all have different views on things, and they may have different objectives for why they're there or what they're trying to do as a board member. So it's really critical to understand their perspective and what they're there to do. And that might not be the same for every board member. And so that's one of the good things about private equity, is you generally have one organization on your board, and you get a lot of clarity on what the board wants to go do. And they tend to be very aligned. But even within that, you still have to understand the individuals within that investor. The second thing is, and this is a really critical one, is how the board can help you. They're there to help the company grow, and they're there to help make the company successful. And there's a governance role that the board has, which they'll fulfill that function for sure. But they also want to be helpful, right? And they've got, strategy ideas, introductions they can make, market data. There's a lot of things that the board brings to the table. And leveraging that wealth of knowledge and those relationships can really help you, grow the company and grow yourself as an executive. So think of them as partners in addition to just governance.
So I want to get back to your musical roots, kind of your expertise. And how has that translated into your career? Have you drawn any lessons from your experience as a professional musician?
Yeah, the biggest thing when you're, and this goes for sports, music, a lot of different things, right? The concept of a team sport. So I'm a tuba player. I'm the only tuba player usually when I'm playing in a group. And so it's very transparent what I'm doing. Am I doing it correctly? Am I playing my part as well as I can? Am I prepared? Am I doing all the things that I need to do to fulfill my position on the team? But secondarily, because it is a team, you have to work with other people. You have to listen to other people. You have to fit in with what other people are doing. And other people may have ideas that don't align with your ideas, and you have to make the whole thing gel. And there's a lot of people in business that kind of approach it with the I mentality. I did this, I did this, I did that. There's very, very few things that we do in a business scenario that's an I. It's almost always a we. And that team mentality that you learn playing sports, playing music, playing whatever at a high level is super important. And that translates incredibly well. The other thing is going to a school like Juilliard, where everybody is really good at what they do. I was just there on Sunday, actually. I was in New York for a thing. Okay. I stopped by the school to meet with somebody who's on the faculty there, and got in and walked around and kind of reminisced about things that were going on there, 35, 38 years ago. And you see the kids there, they're all like chasing a dream. They're all like chasing something that they want to be really great at. And that pursuit of greatness is something that sticks with you like your whole life. And being around other people that have that same desire translates as well. So, it's that old saying of you are who you hang out with. So if you can hang out with people that are aspiring to be great and that are having success being great, you're going to go right along with them, and you're also going to probably be great. So that's how they tie together for me.
Yeah, that's great. So as you're in technology, you've been around technology throughout your career. What are you most excited about as you look at the trends and all that's going on and how fast technology is expanding with AI and all the things going on? What are you most excited about?
I'm always excited about new frontiers and things that are changing and making people better at what they do. My company, Team Dynamics, where I'm CEO now, we sell ITSM software that's enabled by, AI and automation. That has a lot of other adjacent use cases around asset management and project management and integrating with other applications and, virtual support agents and all these things that are brand new. And the thing that drives me is I think all the way back to where I was a support tech. I talked earlier about where I started my career. I can think about all the stuff that I did back then that was just, drudgery, right? It was toil and people wanting passwords changed and people wanting connections reset and printer queues reset and all these things. Well, you can automate all that stuff and, get rid of all that part of the job that people don't like. And it gets us into this idea of work-work balance, right? Where there's things you like to do at work and there's things you don't like to do at work. So if you can move the things you don't like to do off your plate, you're going to have a lot more satisfaction at what you do. And so that part of it in the industry excites me. Some of the things that you can do with AI, where it's removing a lot of those things in our daily lives, where we can spend more time thinking and spend more time being people versus just doing things repetitively. We've gotten super busy as a culture with, these things, as a leash all the time. And it's a lot easier for somebody to send you an email and put something on your plate than it is for them to do it themselves. And so we have this thing in our culture where we feel like we have to do all those things just because somebody asked. And so we tend to have way, way more stuff to do than time to do it. And so technology these days is really kind of giving us a chance to equalize that.
So with the changes rapidly, and I know people that are, working with AI every day and developing some of the tools, they say it's just to stay on top of everything that's going on. Is there any What would you say to a leader who's looking to make it a tool that you could use to help make people more productive and being able to focus on the things that they maybe are energized to do versus the busy work? But how do you stay as a CEO of an AI technology company? How do you stay on top of all the trends?
Yeah, it's one of the things I found is there are people who are very forward with any new technology. We saw this in the dot-com world. We saw this, the times right now with AI are very, very similar to like the late 90s, early 2000s when everything was going to be online and brick and mortar stores were going to go away and everything's going to be, a dot-com website. Turns out it was a both, right? It's an and, right? You're going to have that and traditional ways of doing things. And we're in that same world now. So seeking out people that are thought leaders in that, where you can kind of see what actually helps you and what actually creates, productive time, is important. And there are people that are better at that than others. And so finding the people that are really good at it and seeing what you can learn quickly, is the path that I've found. I feel perpetually behind in what I can do with AI and what's available. And, we use Microsoft Copilot and there's some other tools that I use and it's sort of like with Microsoft Word. I use 5% of the features in the product, right? There's probably a lot of other things I could do that I just don't know what they are. And that's kind of how I feel with AI. I know there's a lot of things I can do with it, and I know there's the things that I do with it today, and I know there's a lot more that I could be doing. So how do I find out what those things are? So reading and finding people that are forward thinkers on that is the best way to accelerate that.
Well, it's kind of the shiny object. I think people can get distracted and go down a lot of rabbit trails and waste time where I think that's true of a lot of technology is get distracted and not stay focused. So
Yeah.
that's
I think there's a real element these days with what's going on with AI, where a lot of it is technology for technology's sake. And, I drive up the 101 or I drive across Manhattan or I go through an airport and you see all these ads. It just says AI and maybe it has a company logo on it. It doesn't tell you what problem they solve. It doesn't tell you what benefit they're providing. It just says AI. And that's not useful. There's a framework that I really, really like called pragmatic marketing. And one of the things in pragmatic marketing is the concept of product market fit and your distinctive competence. And one of the questions they ask is, will customers or potential customers pay money to make this problem go away? And you can think of all kinds of technologies that are out there, right? And the fact that you can create all these interesting little GIFs or you can create cartoon strips with AI or whatever is interesting, but I'm not going to pay money for that. What I'm going to pay money for are things that get me time back or that make me better at my job or give me more insights into what I'm doing, right? And that's hard. That's not just typing a prompt into ChatGPT. That's actually building software and building a platform that solves real problems. And I think that's something the world's still reckoning with right now is, kind of vibe coding and building, little small tools that go on top of things. It's useful and it's helpful, but it's not the thing that people are going to necessarily build businesses out of or run businesses from. And there's exceptions to that. And I don't want to be too contrarian, but I think, the art of building software and the art of building a company and the art of building a platform is still alive and well. You can just do it a lot faster now that we have these tools that are available.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sure that you continue to learn and develop as a leader. Any books that you recommend to other leaders that you think have been helpful?
Yeah, there's a few that come to mind. One of the ones that I use a lot the last few years is a Patrick Lencioni book called The Advantage. There's a concept in there called the rally cry, which is what's the one thing that's the most important for your company to accomplish over a particular period of time. And then you build out all of the objectives around that and all the initiatives underneath that that help you achieve that one goal. It's a super powerful way to get a company aligned. There's a book that Frank Slootman wrote called Amp It Up. Frank was the CEO when I was at Data Domain, and I got to spend a lot of time with him during those few years. And his ability to raise expectations, increase urgency, and elevate intensity is like nobody I've ever seen. And a lot of that's captured in this book. And it just it's always a good reminder to me that, you know, you got to move with pace, and you have to call things like they are, and you have to face the hard truths and go get it done. And then the third one that is really made an impact on me, we use this a lot at NetApp, was Michael Tracy and Fred Wersima's book, The Discipline of Market Leaders. So this one and The Innovator's Dilemma were two of the core books during that time, kind of in the early 2000s. But there's three value disciplines that Tracy talks about. One of them is operational excellence, which is lowest cost price, basically. Product leadership, which is, do you have the best products? And then customer intimacy, do you have the best solutions or relationships? And the concept is you can't do all three of those things and be equally good at all of them. You have to pick one. And so you have to choose one to focus on. You still have to be adequate in the other two, but you got to pick one of those lanes to be great at. And every great company I can think of, you can put them in one of those three categories, that is the thing they do. You know, using Dell as an example, they don't necessarily have the best products. They may not always have the lowest cost or price, but they definitely have the best customer intimacy in the way that they focus on how they go about, you know, selling to their customers. So those are the three probably that come to mind the most.
Yeah. Oh, you named some that I don't think have been mentioned yet. So that's a feat to get. So definitely. Yeah.
One of those two of those are oldies, but goodies.
Okay, great. So as a leader, what do you want to be remembered for, kind of legacy, as people think of your leadership?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is it's back to that team player we concept that I provided earlier. I've been fortunate to help some people get started in their careers in technology, help people change careers. I think I've helped people elevate their careers and evolve their careers. And I think, you know, being a good leader of the team is what I want to be remembered for, that we did meaningful things. We helped people, you know, improve their careers and improve their lot in life. And that we did great things for our customers, right? That these were companies that made a mark in the world, and, you know, we did things the right way, high integrity, you know, do what we say we're going to do, but leading that team and being part of the we, you know, not an I.
So outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
It's a lot of the things you normally see. I like to travel with my wife and family. I do still play music.
Okay.
There's a number of groups here in the Bay Area that I perform with as a freelance musician. That exercise is a very different part of my brain. And, you know, a lot of people get ideas when they're, you know, in the shower or when they're riding a bike or they're running or working out at the gym. I get a lot of ideas and my brain starts firing when I'm sitting in the back of an orchestra with my tuba. And a lot of times I don't play, right? There's spots in symphonies and orchestra stuff where you play, and there's a lot of time where you don't. And that time when I'm not playing, there's just stuff going off in my head. It's a thought-provoking environment for me. And then I try to play golf. And I say try, which I'm decent at it, but it's a struggle because I can't seem to improve no matter what I do. And I'm used to being able to figure things out and figure out how to improve. And I just can't get better at golf. I don't think I have the talent for it, but I'm going to keep trying.
So final thoughts that you would give to an up and coming leader?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is don't create limits for yourself, right? A career is a long time. And, you know, we tend to do things in long periods of time. And these days, everything tends to be very compressed. And, you know, what am I doing this month or next month? But, you know, taking a long-term view of things without creating limits is important. And then do the absolute best job you can do in whatever your job is. If your job is to be the bottle washer, make sure the bottles are absolutely clean, right? So do the best job you can. That sets an anchor for your next role. And everybody that you encounter along the way is going to have an impression of you and your work, you know, so do whatever you can to make sure that impression is solid and strong. And like I said earlier, helping others pays big dividends, you know, so never, ever forget to be a team player. You know, there's almost nothing we do that's just ourselves. It's a team sport, right? And no matter what role you're in, it's still going to be a team sport. So so do the best job you can to play in your position and try to pick the best team that you can possibly be on.
Well, Rod, this has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed our conversation. How would somebody learn more about your company and your work?
Yeah, if you go to teamdynamics.com, you can see what we do as a company and see what we're doing. We are very fortunate to be helping a lot of companies, you know, save money and improve the work environment for their employees. And so I'm really excited about what we're doing there.
Great. Well, I wish you continued success as you lead your organization, and great to connect with you.
Great to connect with you, Mark. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.